I'm Britt Bowen, voice of Auburn women's basketball and Auburn softball. You're listening to Sports Call on Tiger 95.9.
Welcome back into the program. It's Sports Call on Tiger 95.9 FM and the Tiger Communications app. J.J. Jackson sitting here with Tom Peavy and Commissioner Sankey on the program just a moment ago. And Chuck Oliver now joins us here on Radio Row. It's been 2 years since we've seen you, Chuck.
Yeah, you know, I got all these folks that I say, it's good to see you about once every 24 this time. So, yeah, and didn't it kind of redefine, like, it really is kind of good to see people?
Very much
yeah,
so.
That
yeah.
really is.
I appreciate y'all inviting me back on, man.
Absolutely. We've spoken on the phone, of course, since we've seen each other face-to-face, but it has been some time since we've been able to chat. Let's look back at talking Auburn Tigers always here on this program, and when you look back at the last 24 months of Gus Malzahn there, what went wrong?
This is going to be harsh, man, because it wasn't anybody's fault necessarily. What went wrong was it would have been better for Bo Nix and Gus Malzahn if they never got together. But we know the issue. I mean, Bo pops out of the womb going War Eagle. Well, I know where he's going in 18 years, and he happens to grow up as a five-star quarterback for a local kid. So that almost kind of had to happen. It would have been better if it did not. It was not the right skill. Like Gus, I think, is a really good coach. I know Bo was a really skilled quarterback. Square peg, round hole. That was one of the first things. Plus, I had Gus on, like, right after he went to UCF. And I said, you know, I'm real fond of him and Christy and the whole – I love everybody. I was like, Coach, you got yourself fired. He's like, you're right, I did. He said, I got away from who I was, the pace, the everything. And not even with Cam. Y'all remember Nick Marshall there?
Yeah, oh yeah.
My gosh, that mesh they would work. You know, the dive, pulling that ball out. I mean, the rule is the running back gets to the quarterback's front thigh. If the ball's still there, it's his. They'd be halfway into the A gap, and like Marshall's like Plastic Man reaching, and then he would pull it and be big gain. So, he got away from that when he said, "Well, everybody else is running pace, so there's no advantage." And so he kind of got away from being himself. Now I said, you know, what went wrong? That was the one thing. The offensive line, and I was real candid about this before he even got fired. You've had misses. Yeah, everybody says you missed on the recruiting trail. There's a step before that. It's evaluating. And, again, I don't mean because this kid did something I never did. Calvin Ashley couldn't play.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was the five-star that Auburn that's the kid. And that's the recruiting win you got? I'm looking back now when I know everybody offered him. I'm wondering if maybe there was some evaluation from some. So that's the first step, evaluate, then recruit, and then get them on campus. And, you know, the Auburn offensive line was that second issue. I think I remember being on with y'all a couple of years back, and we were saying, who's going to be the next quarterback? And I was like, I'm kind of intrigued by this Malik Willis kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Gus knows more than me. Turns out maybe Malik should have gotten a little bit more of a run there. So making the wrong choices at quarterback and then just getting, just skull-dragged on the recruiting trail when it comes to offensive linemen. Those are the two biggies.
How much did the actual philosophy also play in? Because it's been shown, it's been reported on numerous guys that leave the Auburn program, go to the NFL. They get there. I look at Braden Smith, numerous other guys. They get there. They're not prepared for the NFL.
And Greg Robinson.
Greg Robinson. That wide receivers that are like, I was not prepared for the NFL. Uh-huh. So I would think that Saban, Smart, all these guys, when they look at a recruit, they say, don't go there. They are not going to prepare you for the NFL.
I said
that. In the meantime.
I'm an Auburn grad and a member of the Alumni Association. Right. And I said on the radio when Brockemeyer and Latham and all them were committing. I mean, Gus was still a coach.
Right.
And so I had an Auburn fan. Well, when are we going to get these? And I talked about it on the air. I was like, if you were an offensive line, I mean with a real offer, a committable offer is the phrase to Alabama. I was like, I'm going to need you to tell me why you're not taking it now. Maybe dad and granddad played at, you know, wherever else, and I'm going to be a legacy. That was Brockemeyer at Texas. Dad and granddad played there. And he and his brother are like, yeah, not for us. We're going to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yeah. I was talking to Chris Landry, who I think y'all know. And, you know, he's got Super Bowl rings, NFL scout, all that. And I was talking about this exact thing. Greg Robinson goes second overall, and I'm like, oh, good for him, but – what did the Rams see?
Right.
Because he was not asked to do anything that an offensive tackle is asked to do on a Sunday. I mean, other than pads, and you got to have a hip pad and knee pad, other than that, not one thing. And so if you're an offensive lineman and you get a real offer to Bama, That's absolutely where you should have been going.
Okay. All right, and so now fast forward. Now you got Brian Harsin coming in. He's got Mike Bowe, the offensive coordinator. It seems like that philosophy is going to be night and day from what Malzahn did. Yep. Maybe some things in there because of the personnel that you've got. You got to go with what you have. But it seems like the philosophy is going to be more geared towards multiple, more geared towards some of the terminology you're going to see at the next level. Quarterback under center, actual play action from under center, a route tree with your wide receivers that is a little more sophisticated.
Oh, you don't mean like screen pass or shot play?
Or
those were the two options.
One or two read, 50-50 ball, you know. It's going to be more sophisticated. Do you agree with that, that this system is going to be more geared that way?
I do, and a lot of it is, you know, Brian Harsin, we know his track record, but Mike Bobo, I mean, I know.
Yeah.
Power-based run game, work play action off of it, and then try to hit something over the top if it's there. Mike Bobo is about as close to a Sunday coordinator, mentality-wise, what you're asking. You know, approach-wise, he's about as close to a Sunday coordinator as I think you'll find in the SEC, and there are others who are similar to it. But that's exactly what it is with Brian Harsin. It's a lot of first-year coach sort of stuff as well. Hey, we got to get tougher and more physical and run the ball. And that sells, whether it's real or not. That sells. Right. What doesn't sell is you get a new coach. Like, I've never heard the guy show up in the first thing press conference is like, hey, we got to be more finesse. We got to be more about just screening guys off.
Right.
Now, you know, it's always, well, we got to be tough and physical. Well, coming off the Gus experience, you believe the more physical message a little bit more. And then Derek Mason, he's going to kind of have to, you know, hold the fort for a little bit over there, but he's got a lot of talent to work with as well.
We could talk about that defense for sure, but a little bit more on the offensive side of the ball. We mentioned Gus Malzahn now at UCF, and success for sure will come his way with that new landing spot possibly. But Bo Nix and the other side of that partnership we talked about, what does the future look like for him at that position?
Well, it kind of happened in a hurry, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, there is a realistic, and I don't think Bo was much of a candidate for, you know, 2020 to be this magic year that never counted. I think he's going to be like a four-year guy and then be ready to go, which means he's halfway through right now. There are other quarterbacks who came out with Bo who are going to be a redshirt freshman this year. They really redshirted, and then last year didn't count.
Right.
And so now they're going to be a redshirt freshman in their third year. Bo's a junior. And, you know, by his classification, I know they could say redshirt sophomore. It better happen in a hurry, but he does have the skill set, I believe, to do more than he had to. He learned some really bad habits, and it was because of the offensive line and the play calling, et cetera. And then also, once he started learning those bad habits, that's what my observation, he started relying on it, man. And I saw him bail from more survivable pockets, not clean pockets, but survivable pockets.
Absolutely.
And but I got to say, he learned it. He learned that.
Right.
How much is a guy like T.J. Finley going to push him, or do you think it's the Bo show and
Bo,
maybe T.J. gets a chance in cleanup duty,
barring
an injury, or obviously. But.
If I'm out at Caesars and I got a Franklin and I'm at the window where I'm ready to bet on something, it's going to be Bo Nix as the starter.
Right.
But I think absolutely it's a key component there because Gus had declared early, and Joey Gatewood caught on to it.
Right.
He's like, all right, you know, this is going to be the guy. There was no one, not a real threat. And again, there's no disrespect to Grant Loy.
Right.
He wasn't going to push for a starting job in the SEC, and he wasn't supposed to. My opinion, he was supposed to be the COVID quarterback, the guy that we don't practice with everybody else. So if we get bad news on a Saturday morning, well, at least we've got a quarterback in bubble wrap who can take the snap and we can function. Every coach in America started looking for that safety quarterback last year.
Right.
Well, if that's the case, it's not pushing your starter. And I think, like, when was the last time Bo really got pushed? I don't know. Y'all ever have Jason Caldwell on?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah.
Love Jason. And I remember asking him about Bo. He's like, Chuck, one of the first times he saw Bo, he's like, something about, like, threw five or six touchdown passes as an eighth grader. He's like, Bo's used to playing.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine Bo hadn't been pushed very much that, you know, if there's a football around and you're using a quarterback, well, it's going to be me. This year he will get – I mean, T.J. Finley started more than anybody else in Baton Rouge last year.
We're talking with Chuck Oliver here on Sports Call today about our Auburn Tigers. And, Chuck, we mentioned the defense a little bit earlier. Derek Mason comes in a little bit, but they've got the linebackers that are so talented. Smoke Monday leading the secondary with his experience and leadership. What do you think about that defensive unit?
A lot of tough players. And I think that, like Roger McCreary, Ricks and Stingley and at the pair at Mississippi State who are really, really good. You know, Kirby's airlifted in a bunch of All-Stars. I think the Auburn secondary is a lot better than people realize, and especially it starts with Roger McCreary. He could be as – I want to use the right word here because I don't think he's going to have six picks and take two of them back.
Sure.
Like, he's an NFL corner right now. He doesn't back up. He doesn't back away from the physical. I really, really like that kid. And then some of the other – like, brought in talent from West Virginia – and then some of the young'uns growing up as well. There's a lot of, like, wiry, like, willowy athletes back there that you can do some things with, and so I like it.
You mentioned being an Auburn alum.
Yeah.
You mentioned being a part of the Alumni Association and that sort of thing. No Auburn in this, obviously, objectively, which is what you do on your program. We love listening to it so much. And an affiliate here at Tiger Communications for many, many years. I want to talk stadiums because they're going to be back at 100% capacity and that sort of thing. Where does Jordan-Hare rank out of the 14?
Maybe not as high as it used to, because honestly, in the SEC, there are only a few that, you know, you would talk about all in the same realm, and
right.
Jordan-Hare was one of them. How old are you?
I'm 25.
Oh, so there was a chance you were at the Brody game.
Yeah.
Were you at the Brody Coral?
I was not, no.
Okay.
Sack Brody.
Yeah.
I was in the press box working for the Opelika Auburn News.
Okay, I'm an OA News alum.
There you go.
So I'm in the press box that day, and Alabama, I was like, Alabama lost the game on the coin toss because they took the ball.
Yep.
And they're like, all right, we're kicking that way. He never got out of the student section.
Nope.
The entire first quarter, they never got out of the student section. I was like, guys, you just don't understand it. I've had opposing fan bases come in, and they're like, that bird started flying around. It brought a tear to my eye. I was like, that's what it is, man. They play Welcome to the Jungle, start running out. I was like, it's one of the best environments ever. Now, here's why it may not be as high anymore, because you're talking about Death Valley. You're talking about, honestly, not Tuscaloosa as much as you know, the Swamp, obviously. There are some places, and we know them, and Auburn was one of, like, the three best in the conference. I grew up in Georgia. I am 53 years old. Until about 3 years ago, I had heard twice in my life what an environment Athens was. One was the blackout game against Auburn in 07, and there was an LSU game a couple years later. I'm like, yeah, that blackout game, you were losing in the middle of the third quarter. Okay, so it wasn't anything magical about these jerseys or whatever else. Or does the black jersey wait 2.5 quarters to kick in?
Right.
Twice in my lifetime, I'd been in Athens and went, wow. That's different with Kirby now. And
yeah.
Kirby's bought some of that, you know, hard edge, middle finger, you know, we're going to do some
for
of that.
Sure.
And so Athens has finally become a place where you look around and go, we might have to deal with crowd a little bit. But Auburn had always been top three for me. And that Brody game is just about – I mean, that's the end of the rainbow for an Auburn fan, man. That was about as good as it gets.
I grew up going to Georgia games. Before I went to Auburn, I grew up season ticket.
Oh, so you're like everybody else, Georgia and Auburn and Auburn.
Yeah, I'm
until
I'm
Nick Fairley ruined it for everybody.
I'm one of those. I'm
instead
one of those guys.
Instead of being that, you know, that brother against yeah. brother, it's
but,
like
– But, yeah, in Athens, everybody was, it never really got loud because the whole end of that stadium was open and all the sound goes out towards the Butts Mirror building. And so you
over the bridge.
Over the bridge, and yeah. it just goes out. Well, now it's kind of closed in, built up. And, yeah, I mean, the game that they had against Notre Dame and the lights go out.
The LED
and
board
all the,
and all that.
Yeah, but the lights go out and all the cell phones are up. The band's playing their Superman theme. And it's like, where the hell did this come from?
Okay.
This never happened at Georgia in all my years of being in Sanford Stadium. Holy crap.
If you didn't see the pregame, and honestly, the entire game environment against Notre Dame, that's one of those things where everybody else in the conference is like, okay, that LED ribbon board and the light show and all that, we're going to get one of those.
Yep.
Everybody's got money, okay?
Sure.
I mean, it's the SEC. Every single program has one of those Breaking Bad storage facilities with the $80 million in it, you know? My school paid $14 million for a television, all right? And everybody else around the SEC was like, well, we got $14 million. Let's get us a big TV, too. And that's what they did in Athens. When they
yeah.
backed it up against the bridge side, it kind of walls in that sound, and it actually played
yeah.
a role in making Athens even a little bit more, because it's not like a Jordan-Hare where they put it up top. I mean, literally, there's like one row of stands and then a bridge. And so they used it actually to kind of their benefit.
Before we let you get out of here, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the Atlanta Braves and the season that they've had. And the Acuna injury obviously sucks. But Chuck Oliver's thoughts on Atlanta's season so far.
My first team that I ever had. And I went to my first Braves game, opening night, 1977.
Oh, wow.
I was like a little like five-year-old or six-year-old, I think. So, anyway, I've been a Braves fan my whole life, and it's just a really, really difficult season. I didn't have a scenario, if we even go back a month ago, even after the Ozuna idiocy, I didn't have a scenario where the Braves were selling, but it's undeniable now. If you follow Major League Baseball and you know what the trade deadline is every year, it's give me a veteran arm whose contract's about to expire so I don't have to pay a whole lot for him. That's Drew Smyly. That's Charlie Morton. Two veterans who can help more of a contender get there in October. Whereas with the Braves, the Braves could trade some prospects right now and get Starling Marte and Adam Duvall and, pick. They could get Craig Kimbrell.
Right.
I think Kimbrell's going to be pitching for somebody else.
Yeah.
They could do all that stuff. And I think they could rally to about 86 wins and swept in the first round by the Padres. That's what I think would happen if they went just loaded for bear. Now, the tough part for me is I know Alex Anthopoulos, as a GM, he's been to the playoffs 6 straight seasons. He ain't used to losing.
Yeah.
And so it may be that – see, this is why I always say I want to hire a woman for all of the – like every important role, because men start going chest out like, my God, I got 6 in a row. Women don't do – they just evaluate and make the right decision. All right? Alex Anthopoulos, he's going to have some of that ego involved.
Did the Jock Peterson move mean anything in terms of
– okay. I think he's going to get flipped. He's another – like they traded for him a week ago. I think they're going to try him out for a couple of weeks. They're going to evaluate right before the trade deadline. If they get hot,
that would be wild.
If they go like 8-3 over the, because they got a doubleheader today and another doubleheader. So I think they got 11 games in 10 days. If they go like 8-3, I'm going to be like most Braves fans going, my gosh, give me a 3-8. Go ahead and make the trades. But I think if they tank just a little bit over this next week and a half,
flipping,
Peterson could be gone too.
What do you love about doing the show still? The Chuck Oliver show and then your afternoon drive show as well.
Okay.
Like what motivates you to keep going?
I hope my boss isn't listening. It's what I would be doing for a couple hours if I was working in an office like selling insurance. Like I would be in my cubicle going, is the boss around? I'm going to read some college football. And I walk in every day and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be doing this. Yeah, so I don't have to like cover the monitor and all. So, I just love it. And so many personalities, getting to know so many of the great experts throughout the SEC. Because I've always said, I've got this, it's called the Peter King theory. Peter King, like I'm a Falcons fan. You may be a Saints fan, Titans, whoever. I know more about the Atlanta Falcons than Peter King does. Peter King knows more about the Jets, Vikings, Bears, Chargers, Rams, everybody else. I love that about talking to college football fans and experts who cover the team. Like, I cover all I do all day, every day, for the past 21 years is college football. There's an LSU fan listening right now who knows more than I ever will about the Tigers. And I love that because when you see them at games, you talk to them, you get to, talk to somebody who covers a team.
Right.
It's like, I do this as my profession and I'm supposed to know whatever there is supposed to know. This guy, this girl, they know more than me. And there's always a reason to sit down and have a conversation.
You're the best. How did King's AFP become a thing on Twitter?
That's fun. Literally, I got asked this yesterday by somebody. I've never been asked it before. 2002, I'm hosting just afternoon drive in Atlanta, and I'm just Chuck Oliver. And so I'd been working around. They had hired me to be their college football guy. So a guy named Rob Weingarten, he was our PD.
Okay.
And, fast-talking Yankee and, not really going over real well in Atlanta. And I was like, this guy knows everything there is to know about radio. I'm going to listen to him.
Yeah.
And he called me into his office in 2002 and said, I made a decision. You're going to be the king of college football, and we've already trademarked it. I literally I sat across. I was like, let's not do this. I was like, really, please, let's not do this. And he's like, you're worried about making the declaration and then having to live up to it. I was like, I don't want people to think I gave myself this name.
Right.
He's like, you're going to be the king because we're going to call you the king, and then you're going to be it. And so it's like 19 years later, he's like, dude, you already know everything about the sport. He's like, you're already 4 steps ahead. Just declare it now. And I was like, I'm going to let you declare it. So he did, and they got the trademark and all that. And so still, we're almost 2 decades later. And I'm like, every morning
and
I'm
you're
like,
still not declaring it.
Oh, no, no, no. I get up every morning. I was like, damn it, somebody's going to call me the king of college football. I better live up to this. Who's Boise? Boise, Nevada. All right, what's going on tonight?
So if somebody brings you a crown, you're punting that thing across Radio Row.
I showed up to before the 2002 SEC championship game, Arkansas and Georgia. I've been the king for about 4 months.
Right.
They had set up a stage, a Q&A with me on a stage and Herschel Walker. And I showed up, and they had a scepter and a robe and a throne. And I was like, I know. I was like, I am,
wow.
I'm not doing it. And so then they brought a couch out, and I just sat there, and we did it kind of standard. But I really was uncomfortable with it.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm like, damn it, I gotta live up to this still.
Chuck, that's the second time the 2002 SEC Championship game has been mentioned in the past half hour, because Commissioner Sankey told us that was the very first SEC game he ever went to.
It was not a good game. It was not. And I got to tell you, I've been to, I think, like 24 of the SEC title games. Not only the worst seat I've ever had for an SEC championship game, I literally was sitting in the worst seat in the Georgia Dome. I was in the middle of the end zone, top row. And if y'all remember the Georgia Dome, about every like 60 feet in the top, there would be that concrete pillar that would jut out.
Yep.
My left shoulder was like resting on it as it jutted out. I literally was in the top row, seat looking down there. And I saw Georgia like run all over Kent Hamlin and the rest of that defense. And
that's
go to Sugar Bowl.
That is no place to put a king.
Spread the rumor, man. Thank you.
Are you buying stock in Arthur Smith?
Yeah, I really am. Okay. And boy, Kyle Pitts. That's a fun-looking tight end, isn't it, man? He's going to do some good stuff with him.
I'm a Carolina Panthers guy from the States, so I don't want to hear any of that Falcon stuff coming up. But we'll see. We'll see. Chuck, we always do appreciate the time. Thank you for doing this with us.
Anytime, man.
It's always great. You can listen to Chuck Oliver on the Chuck Oliver Show, 1230 WAUD in the Auburn and Opelika area.